BFFT. Now, built by high caliber millwrights, in for John Canzano, here's Jude and Newby and Stephen Vaughn with the Bald Faced Truth.
Hour two of the program, Jude Newby and Stephen Vaughn in for John Canzano and you at 503-417-7575. A lot to get to. We'll do a little punch at audio. We'll give you some NFL bets that we have coming up in the final hour of the show as well. And talk a little Ducks and Beavs along the way. Dan Lanning was on with Rome today. Always good to get that national pub. And talking some big things. So let's get to it. Let's do a little punch and audio this segment and get caught up with the best sound in sports.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Faced Truth headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
Let's go with the Seahawks and Titans. Mike McDonald joint practices with the Titans. Little reaction from the Seahawks' first-year head coach. Punch it.
A lot of positive things at the line of scrimmage, especially with our ones. Some things in the back end we need to clean up for sure. And the two defense. You know, we'll evaluate what it looks like. I don't want to come to any conclusions right now, but we'll see when we get a chance to watch it.
I think he's tempering expectations just a little bit, but. You know, Stephen, early returns on the Seahawks defense has been Byron Murphy looking really good early, their first-round pick in the recent draft. That's exciting. You know, there's some back-end stuff I'm sure they want to iron out, but to have your first looks at Byron Murphy be positive is an early win for that draft pick.
What do you think the ceiling for the Seahawks defense is this season? Because I think the offense is really high, the ceiling is. But now you get Mike McDonald in there. You get some draft picks, like you said, Byron Murphy last season, Devin Witherspoon. They're really good. Like, they seem like they fit the defense as well. This is what they want. Like, what's the ceiling for this defense? Can they be a top 10 defense in the NFL this year? And if that's the case, like, are they a playoff team? Are they in the race for the NFC West division title?
I think that's what makes them so exciting, right? I mean, people look at the Seahawks, and they're probably the most, you know, there's the most excitement over the unknown with the Seahawks than any team in the NFL right now because of that. Their ceiling, I think, is a top five defense. Would they reach that? Probably not. You know, probably not. But are they capable of that? In yards, points allowed, red zone, third down, turnovers, like... You know that metric DVOA, right? It analyzes your efficiency as an offense or as a defense or as a team. From Football Outsiders, Aaron Schatz put it together, and it's really popular now, DVOA. So defensive efficiency for the Seahawks, I think they could be a top 10 DVOA defense, one of the more efficient defenses in getting teams off the field, limiting successful plays, limiting explosive plays, creating explosive plays of their own on the defensive side of the ball. I think they could be a top 10 this year. I think their ceiling is top 5. Does that make them a playoff team? Well, it depends on how good the offense is this year, but there's reason to be excited about the offense as well. But I think getting a guy like Mike McDonald, it will look a little different than what he was able to do in Baltimore. But Stephen, the stuff he was doing in Baltimore, I mean, how many superstars are on that Ravens defense? Two? Or maybe three if you throw in Madubuike on the D-line? But there were like five guys that played like superstars last year. And Geno Stone, Jadeveon Clowney had the best year of his career last year.
And that's the thing you're hopeful if you're a Seattle fan is that he can turn some of these guys who, you know, maybe career journeymen and turn them into solid starters or make them elevate from solid starters to, you know, a Pro Bowl type of season, All Pro type of season.
Yeah.
And hopefully someone like, you know, maybe Witherspoon pops like Kyle Hamilton did under Mike McDonald. Like something
How cool
would
that be?
Yeah. And so I think there is a lot of hope right now if you're a Seattle fan. And they are flying under the radar a little bit. And I think that's where you want to be. Last year, there was some expectations after making the playoffs the year before. This year, missed out on the playoffs last year. I think there's a little flying under the radar here. Everyone's paying attention to Brandon Ayuk and the 49ers situation. We all love Matthew Stafford and Sean McVay. I think Seattle's kind of in a good spot right now, flying under the radar on that. No one's really thinking about him.
Stafford left practice with a hammy today, I saw. Little hammy tweak, so... Hope he'll be okay by the time the season gets going anyway. Anthony Richardson. A lot of expectation for this second-year quarterback in Indianapolis. Talking about his head coach, Shane Steichen. Punch it.
Man, I think he's a genius, honestly. I'm pretty sure people already know that, but just like actually being in the room with him and just hearing him talk about football, the man knows so much. And it's like, hey, I'm lucky enough to have someone that knows this much about ball, so he can just teach me. So, yeah, I think he's a genius.
Great voice, huh? Anthony Richardson, that is a phenomenal voice. What do you think Anthony Richardson is capable of this year, Steven?
A lot of good things. As long as he can stay healthy. And that's the thing. It's at Florida, he'd have two really good games, and then he'd have three really bad games. Think about that Utah game they had week one 2 years ago. He was by far the best player on the field, and it wasn't even close. Then they end up losing a couple games, and it looks like, oh, man, like, maybe he doesn't have it. And then he becomes, a top five pick, and he looks great in the first couple of games, running for a touchdown all, two or three games he played. And he gets hurt for the rest of the season. He has to stay healthy, but the guy has all the talent in the world, and he always has. He's the most athletic quarterback, ever, according to the scouting combine. Not even close. And Shane Steichen is a genius. The fact that the Colts were 9-8 last season with Gardner Minshew, there's a lot of hope, I think, for Indianapolis. As long as Anthony
Richardson... They were a drop pass away from winning the division.
They were. And I think as long as Anthony Richardson can stay healthy, man, they got a chance to make the playoffs for sure.
Beaver offensive coordinator Ryan Gunderson, he was getting frisky with the media yesterday. He had another take on...
I think I found out who asked the question, though. I think it was Daschle.
You do? It was Daschle? Well, that checks out. Daschle, friend of the show, but Daschle can get a little frisky. Ryan Gunderson also talking about the quarterback competition. Punch it.
We're repping all of them, so it's close. But, we need them to start separating and just be consistent day after day, and that'll be the guy that we end up going with.
I'm still trying to figure out Ryan Gunderson, Steven. Is he just like, does he want to be the jerk to the media? Which is fine. I got no problem with that. And he's not going to be a jerk, but he's got some edge to him, it looks like. Sounds like right now. I don't know if he's just agitated at the state of his quarterback position or if he feels a little bit of pressure. He doesn't know what he's going to get out of his offense this year.
Yeah, I don't know either. It's tough to tell. What I do know is I do think he is going to be a really good coach. And so I don't have any problem with that. I think he knows what he's doing. But I don't know if he's trying to just pick apart every single question or if he's trying to, cause a whole nobody believes in us type of thing. I don't mind it, though. I think he's a great coach, and I think he's going to figure it out. I also think maybe there's a situation where there may not be a guy in the quarterback room that is elevating themselves, and he really doesn't know what they're going to do. Who am I going to choose? The season is coming up. We're less than a month away. Who's starting week one against Idaho State? We got to go to San Diego State and then host Oregon. Do I have a quarterback that's ready to do this? I don't know that I do. I'm going to have to rely on the run game a lot. I think it might be a little frustration. I think it might be a little us against the world type of thing. But ultimately, as long as Gunderson stays in Corvallis, he'll be fine. But I just think right now he's looking at the quarterback and he's thinking, man, this might be a little bare right now.
We need to recruit some guys.
Yeah, we're gonna have to do some crazy things and to figure this out.
I just remember the Daryl Gerritsen, Seth Collins, Marcus McMarion stretch of quarterback play at Oregon State, and I'm wondering how does this compare to that? Because it got a little bit better when Jebbia came around, Chance Nolan, even though didn't leave on great terms, but he did okay, right? The big win at Fresno State. Then you obviously passed along to Benny G and DJU.
For so many years, man.
And DJ, and then that's what makes the Aiden Childs thing hurt so bad. We were watching the Beaver-Washington game again yesterday on the TVs, and Aiden Childs came in for a handful of plays against Washington, too, and he just looks the part.
He didn't do anything, but...
He just looks the part of a player that could be a very good college football quarterback. Another reason I think people are a little bit sleeping on Michigan State because they don't know how good Aiden Childs, I think, can be, the four-star from Downey, California. But maybe this, Rose kid that John wrote about that just committed to Oregon State, Deegan Rose, right? That's his name, I think, four-star kid from Clovis.
That's the hope, right? And, Canzano's had a lot of people on that say people love that guy.
Yeah.
And Oregon State wasn't the only option. He had higher schools that wanted him, and he's like, nah, Oregon State is the place to be because I could play day one. And I think that's kind of the hope right now. And I think Gunderson.
That'd be sweet.
Yeah, that would be sweet.
Can he use quarterback in Corvallis?
Can he, reclassify and become the quarterback this season?
Maybe. A 2-year reclassification and a 16-year-old true freshman at Oregon State.
I just think it's such a question right now for me for Oregon State as the quarterback.
Now, do you
situation.
Think it's going to be a question all year? Because part of me wonders, hey, let's get a few games under our belt. And then maybe after the first bye week, after Purdue, use that as a chance to maybe bring in McCoy or Gabari Johnson into the fold, but start the year with Ben Gulbranson.
Yeah, I get conflicting reports when I ask people about Oregon State. This one guy I asked, he thinks McCoy is going to be the starter day one. Other people think it's going to be Johnson. Other people think it's going to be Gulbranson.
Wow. Okay. So Gunderson's right. Somebody needs to separate.
That's my problem. I think
it's Gulbranson, but.
But that's the safe choice, right?
I think that's the safe choice.
I think you're right. The first four games, I think Gulbranson could start. But if you're after that Purdue game, you're going against the Mountain West, you need to develop either McCoy or Johnson well enough to make them the starter because they have such a higher upside, I think, than Gulbranson. I think
right.
Johnson in general, and him specifically, has a lot more potential with his running ability. Everyone says he's great at running the football as well. I think that would be such a nice added thing for the Oregon State offense. But I think you're right. I think Gulbranson starts the first couple of games, but we know what that is. And that's fine, but he doesn't have the talent around him that he had him 2 years ago when they won 10 games. And I think that's going to be the problem. He's going to be asked to do a lot more. I don't know that he's ready to do that.
Well, let's hear some sound from Gabari Johnson. This is the Missouri transfer. This guy's the Mizzou kid, Johnson. Or is he the Idaho kid?
This is the Missouri kid. Gabari Johnson is from Missouri. He's from Washington originally, like the state of Washington.
Yeah.
Went to high school there, then he went to Missouri. 4-star prospect.
Talked about his mindset going through the QB competition. Punch it.
My mindset is come out here, show my coach what I can do, and he'll handle the rest, because that's his job to pick a starter anyway. So yeah. We all just need a ball and do what we can.
Also talked about why he thinks he should be the starting quarterback.
I think I can make any throw that he wants within the offense. I can also make plays on my feet, and then like he wants to see, just me going through my reads and making the right decisions. Don't make a bad play worse, which is what he always tells us. So just keep doing that, and I feel like that's what could carry me through.
Now they're probably all going to see time against Idaho State, or maybe just two of them. I don't know, but that Idaho State game, that's a chance to get everybody's feet wet. I would say it's 70-30 chance Ben Gulbranson starts the first road game at San Diego State. You just need somebody that's comfortable, that you can trust not to mess it up on the road first.
Yeah, I think the San Diego State game is right. That's what you're really going to look at and say, okay, this is the quarterback. I think you are also right that Gulbranson should be a favorite, but I don't think it should be a heavy favorite. I think it
right.
should be a slight favorite
yeah.
over that, but I've seen Ben Gulbranson. He's a solid player. I don't want to act like he's the worst, but he's just solid, and I feel like he needs a really good elite team around him offensively, and he doesn't have that.
We should at some point rank all the quarterbacks that have played for Oregon and Oregon State, let's say since 2000, and power rank them. And where do you think Ben Gulbranson would fall on that list? Over, under Jeff Locke. Like, would Jeff Locke win the Beaver starting job? Would Taylor Alley win the Beaver starting job?
No.
That's pretty bad.
Braxton Burmeister.
Oh, Burmeister would not win this job. He could win it at Va Tech.
He started at Virginia Tech and San Diego State.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. That'd be a fun exercise to do sometime.
I don't want to.
Would Ryan Gunderson win this job? Probably.
I don't want to go through this. I don't want to relive all these.
With Lyle Moaville. Love Lyle.
Oh, yeah, Lyle was great.
Love Lyle. Chris Sims talking about the Viking quarterback situation now that J.J. McCarthy is out for the season. Punch it.
J.J. McCarthy, I think, again, if they continue to play him the way they were in week one, yeah, I think he would have been probably the starter week one at the New York Giants. So that's where it does hurt. And it stops a little bit of the progress of what he was building, what they're doing. You know, he doesn't get a chance to kind of build some chemistry in a nucleus with Justin Jefferson and all that. That's what stinks about it. But, like, to your point, Sam Darnold, right, I still think is starting quarterback caliber traits. And if there's a silver lining, they did a great job in not only getting him, just in case they didn't get a quarterback who couldn't play, right? And I think this is the best situation Sam Darnold has ever been in.
I think Sam Darnold can play some good football. The only concern now is, you know, can Sam stay healthy, right? I mean, and that's everybody's concern, but there is a way that this goes really wrong for the Vikings if Sam Darnold either A, doesn't play well, or B, gets hurt. Then they're in a situation like they were last year where it's, you know, trading for Josh Dobbs and him and Nick Mullins trying to carry you to the finish line, Steven. And that would be just be downright depressing if you're the Minnesota Vikings, because with a guy like Kevin O'Connell and a player like Justin Jefferson, you're just hoping for a lot more than that.
Yeah, you are. And now there are reports out there that the Vikings are interested in Derek Carr of the New Orleans Saints because the Saints like what Spencer Rattler has done in the preseason and may go with him. And I I did see that. I saw that right before we started this break here, or this segment here. So
is that from Dove Kleiman?
I don't know. No, it's from Ian Rappaport.
Oh,
no.
My goodness.
No, sorry. That was a different trade.
Is it a fake account?
It might have been fake.
Tell me. We got to know if we got fished on this one.
By Barry? Did Barry get me?
Who's Barry?
I can't exactly. I can't say it. I cannot say it.
Oh, man. Real Scott, report? Derek Carr to the Vikings?
Maybe not. Maybe, I don't know.
All right, well,
I think it's fake. I think we'll fish it out. I think I got Scott Erickson's. But
for the amount of money that Derek Carr is making with the Saints, I'd be really surprised if the Vikings were like, you know what? Let's abandon all hope with Sam Darnold and trade for Derek Carr. That doesn't make any sense to me.
I just feel like Derek Carr, like, he's fine. He's fine. He's had plenty of opportunities. Yeah, like, why is
the
this
difference between Derek Carr and Sam Darnold is not enough for the money and the trade cost that you'll have.
Like, is he really that much better now? Did he learn so much under the 49ers and Kyle Shanahan that he's now a good starting quarterback? Like, I don't see it. He's had plenty of opportunities. He is who he is. I just feel like, he's fine.
Still. I like him still.
I never liked him. I never liked him coming out of college. I thought he was overrated coming out of USC.
Where'd he go? The Jets, right? And then the
Panthers,
and then I guess some Niners, and now here. Yeah, I like Darnold. I think he'll be in a good spot here.
I actually always thought he was overrated. I never really liked him coming out of the draft. So
you know, he was a tight end in high school.
I'm not buying him. I'm not buying it.
Some people were recruiting him as a tight end.
He'll have some plays because he has Justin Jefferson, but I think the Vikings are in trouble this season. It could be just a lost season. J.J. McCarthy is their guy, and so I think it is a hurt. It hurts that he's going to be out the entire season, but at least they know that, because we were questioning this yesterday. Like, do you try to hurry him back, or do you, you know, if he is eligible to play at the end of the season, you throw him out there even with the injury concern? At least now they know, look, he's not going to play this season. We can work on all the other stuff. We can work on the whiteboard stuff. We can work, you know, behind the scenes and on the video stuff and learn that way, just not on the field, and go forward next year as a starting quarterback.
Well, that's the thing. Is he going to be ready to be the starting quarterback next year? Obviously, he'll be rehabbed from injury by then, but will he have enough of the practice field experience to come in and be the starting quarterback? And you would want him to, but to not be able to get the full season of physical reps on the practice field is a loss. You know, and maybe he can get some, but being out for the year just like that, I was surprised by that. It's just a meniscus tear, right? I mean, guys can come back from that in a couple of months, but they decided, you know what, we're just going to ride off the whole year. Just now. It's not like an Achilles. It's not even an ACL. It's a pretty bold decision to be like, you know what, out for the year. Just let's wave the white flag on it. Maybe they wanted the simplicity of that, but he could really benefit from getting the on-field practice if he was able to come back even in like November, December. But just to kind of wave it off and be like, nope, that's all right. He'll be out for the year. We'll just, you know, we'll eat it and we'll come back again in spring and in OTAs. Hopefully, J.J. McCarthy will be able to be in a place by then that he can still be the starting quarterback for them going into next season. But this year, I like what they'll be able to get out of Sam Darnold as long as Darnold is healthy. If he's not healthy, then they're going to be in a tailspin similar to what they had last year when Kirk got banged up and they had to go to Nick Mullins and Jaren Hall and Josh Dobbs for the rest of the year. So we'll see. That's what we're getting right now in training camp. Guys getting banged up and the attrition is starting to pick up, testing teams' depth. And we'll see how it looks when week one rolls around that first weekend in September. Judah Newby and Stephen Vaughn in for John Cazzano. We'll get to more sound here coming up. Get to some more Dan Lanning sound as well, talking about playing Ohio State
react to that and more. And you can chime in at 503-417-7575 right here on the Bald Faced Truth on 750 The Game and the Bald Faced Truth Radio Network. Hi.
Back to the Bald Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Judah Newby and Stephen Vaughn in for John Canzano. John will be back tomorrow, August 31st, coming up when the Ducks take on Idaho. The Beavers take on Idaho State. Kickoff just about an hour apart from both of those games. And both home games, so traffic's going to be sublime on that day, going down to Eugene and Corvallis, respectively. Dan Lanning was making the rounds today. We'll talk to our buddy Jim Rome on the Jim Rome Show. Always good to get a little national pub. Talked about playing Ohio State in Eugene this season.
Yeah, I mean, you said an unbelievable team. We're certainly not looking ahead, but that's you can't look at your schedule and not recognize who there's opportunities to play. And Ohio State has done an unbelievable job year in and year out. They've had a lot of success. They're well coached. They've recruited really well. And they've built a history. So that's the thing that excites you about joining the Big Ten, is that you're going to get to play some teams like that that have such a great history. I know that our fans will be unbelievable for that atmosphere. It's going to be a special game for sure. But fortunately, we get to play some games before we get to that one and continue to improve.
Stephen, what do you think is the best kickoff time for that game? Do you want a 12:30 Fox, or do you want like a 5 o'clock NBC? Or late night CBS, afternoon CBS. The windows for the Big Ten is just crazy.
5 o'clock. The 5 o'clock game, I think, is perfect. That's the prime time.
It could be on ABC too if they get it on Saturday Night Football. But NBC would be pretty sweet.
I don't
Ducks
know.
Ducks Ohio State Saturday night on NBC.
Herbie How cool and would that Fowler. Be? That's like you know that's
the peak.
That's the peak.
But
that's what I want. I want that. I feel like
I got to figure out who's calling the big time games. Is it going to be Noah Eagle on the Big Ten? I like Noah Eagle, but he's still new to a lot of people.
Now I need to look this up because I might have gotten juked again. But I think Noah Eagle's doing the week one game on Peacock.
Yeah, the NFL game, you mean?
Yes.
The Eagles Packers. They're getting the most out of Noah Eagle. He is a very talented young play by play guy. Obviously. Ian Eagle's kid.
Yeah, Noah Eagle and Todd Blackledge.
How did you feel about Noah's performance calling basketball at the Olympics?
Yeah, it was fine. I mean, they have to root for America, which I understand. So I don't necessarily like that. I don't like the homerism. You know, D Wade's out there just rooting for Bam because he played with Bam and doing all this type of stuff, which that's just not my thing. I would rather just have it down the middle. But I understand why you got to root for America and cheer for them. But no, I think he does a good job, and he didn't let the moment take over him. He had some good calls on those Steph Curry threes. Like, they were really good calls,
yeah.
And he didn't mess up, and I think that's great. That's the most important thing. He didn't make any calls where it's like, man, that was bad, and I think that's the most important thing.
You're right. You don't want the calls that are just, like, cringeworthy. We were at the point, my wife and I and sister-in-law, we were at the point where we were, critiquing all the broadcasters and all the sports during the Olympics, because the Olympics, there's like so many niche sports that you might have surface level knowledge of, but you don't know exactly what you're seeing when it's happening. And you need a broadcaster that knows their stuff, but also knows how to communicate the complex into something simple. And so we were all breaking down these guys. And of course, I was kind of leading the charge on all this. But, for the very first time, this is in the weeds, so people may not care. But the longtime gymnastics broadcast team, Al Troutwig, and I can't remember the male voice and the female voice and their names, but they had Nastia Lukin do it a couple years ago in Tokyo. They were really good. And Al Troutwig's voice was part of gymnastics coverage on NBC forever. And this year, I don't know what happened, but they brought on Rich Lerner. Now, if you watch the Golf Channel, which I do, Rich Lerner is always going around doing golf coverage
with Brandel Chambly and the other guy who I like as well, but I always forget his name, the Irish guy. But Rich Lerner was doing gymnastics coverage, and then Lori Hernandez was the analyst for the gymnastics coverage. Lori was on the team in Rio when they won gold. So you have a former American gymnast with a guy that does stuff on the Golf Channel. Obviously, the Golf Channel is an NBC channel. And Lori, all she did was just talk about ghost deductions for the entire Olympics and not explain exactly what ghost deductions were. I'm like, I don't know what a ghost deduction is. She's like, oh, that's a ghost deduction. I'm like, I don't know what the hell that is. You got to tell this to me. And then Lerner, he didn't know what was going on. Everything was just moving too fast for him. And I don't know, Steven, I know I'm way in the weeds with this, but I thought that it could have been done better. The broadcasting of the women's and the men's gymnastics left me a little bit wanting.
Yeah, and it's time. It's time.
I mean, I bet exactly nobody has an opinion on that outside of me, but it really bothered me.
But it is tough, like, as a you're an Olympic fan, so you're just jumping in right at that moment during the Olympics to watch these sports, and you don't necessarily know the rules. But I think it is, you're a little different. Like, you want to know the rules. You want to follow the rules, buy all the book of the rules. I'm just going to watch it for entertainment value. I was super into handball. They were great. The announcers were great. There's like, yeah. Oh, what a pass. What a shot. It's like, I knew that the rules were happening, but I didn't know exactly what was happening. And I like that. I like not knowing exactly what's happening and why it's happening.
The announcers for beach volleyball were awesome. And I don't know the names of the play-by-play and male analyst, but Misty May was the woman analyst. She was fantastic. They knew all the rules. They had fun with each other. They broke down complex things really simply. The broadcasters for indoor volleyball were awesome. It's like, I don't know all the rules of indoor volleyball, but they explained things in the moment and broke down in intense atmospheres. You had Kenny Albert, Marv Albert's kid, who's been a broadcasting, you know, legend for decades. He was doing water polo and crushing it. I was like, how do you get Kenny Albert to do water polo? But it made water polo so fun. Because here, you know, Kenny's done New York Rangers. He's, you know, done a bunch of stuff with the NFL on Fox for 30 years. Kenny Albert's been calling games. And he was on Olympic water polo and just killing it. And so gymnastics, though, is what gets all the eyeballs. And I was like, they don't really know what they're doing. And the chemistry wasn't totally there, so... That's kind of me, too. It's wanting to know the rules, Stephen, but I'm also a broadcasting nerd. So I'm like, I'm always paying attention to the little things in and around a broadcast. You know how I feel about Tony Romo. That matters to me. It matters to me if you can be able to be good at your job on the mic. And I will say this. Never before have there been more exposure for you as a broadcaster. Like, pretty much at any level. We talk about how important live sports is. These days, look at the crazy money being thrown around. It's literally changed college sports because of how many people watch the product on television. For that many people that watch, doesn't it matter even that much more to have people that are good at their jobs that deliver you the product? It's never mattered more to have good broadcasters and good production team behind you than it does right now.
That's true. And that's why I hated the Pac-12 Network, and that's why I hated the Pac-12 on Fox, how they would not even bring the broadcasters to the stadiums, because that makes a difference. For me, like, broadcasting for me, I don't need you to be great. I don't need you to be extraordinary or going out of your way to show me what exactly is happening. I just need you to not be terrible, because it's like they're like referees to me. I really only notice them if they're awful and if they're bad and they're making mistakes. That's how announcers are to me. I don't necessarily listen to the announcers the entire time, but I notice when you make a mistake or you say something silly or you say something out of the ordinary, I will notice it, or I'll find it on the internet and I will make fun of you about it. So for me, it doesn't bother me as much when people aren't, you know, explaining the rules, or they aren't, you know, being so X's and O's wise with it. I just need you not to make mistakes, and I need you to just enhance the game and make it feel like it's a big game. That's what I want. That's why Gus Johnson, I'll always have a special place in my heart for him, because no matter what he's doing, no matter what game he's doing, he elevates it to make it feel like a big game, whether it is or not. I remember the USC-Colorado game. That game was not a big game at all. USC was playing terrible. Colorado was coming back out of nowhere. But Gus makes it feel like it is the Super Bowl. And he makes it feel like it is such an important game. And for me, that's more important than, you know, showing me exactly what's happening in X's and O's wise.
CBS just released recently their kind of play-by-play and analyst and reporter teams, including what's going to be on the CBS Sports Network. Now, CBS has had the SEC, you know, Stephen, forever. I actually looked back at this a little while ago because, you know, whenever you think of SEC football, you think of the, you know, the theme music on CBS, right? And Steve Spurrier in the 90s with Florida. And then Steve
with the old ball coach.
South Carolina. The old ball coach. I read his book a couple years ago. So funny. He is such a character. You know, Tennessee football and everything. Like, the SEC on CBS is football in so many ways. Like, that's what you grew up watching, 1230 CBS, you know, in the Portland market on Channel 6. Like, that is where you got so much of your college football. It's going to be so weird to not have the SEC on CBS this year and have it be the Big Ten. It'll feel like, you know, we've watched a little Sun Bowl on CBS, and that always gets a little funny. Right? Last year, Notre Dame, Oregon State, you had Pitt, Oregon State at one point in that game. You know, so, but it's just going to feel a lot different. Our friend Jordan Kent is going to be part of the play-by-play crew, not on big CBS, but on the CBS Sports Network, which will be carrying a handful of big games as well. So
he always does like Mountain West games, Mountain West basketball games. I remember watching and tune into those and hear Jordan Kent. I'm like, oh yeah, that Jordan Kent. I like it.
Luke Kuechly is going to be an analyst for some select games. The Carolina Panther, you know, linebacking legend and Butkus Award winner. Robert Turbin will do some games.
Seahawks legend.
Seahawks legend Robert Turbin. I know he went to Utah State. You know, the Seahawks drafted two Utah State players in the same draft in 2012 when they took Russell Wilson in the third round out of Wisconsin. Bobby Wagner, second round pick out of Utah State, and Robert Turbin, fourth round pick out of Utah State. One player had a better career than the other, but hey, who's counting?
How good was Utah State that year? Were they a really good team?
Yeah. You know, and I'm trying to like...
There's a couple of those years where Mountain West team, you know, like when Kaepernick was in Nevada.
There's no way Gary Anderson was there at that time, right? At, I really hope not.
There's some of those Mountain West teams back in the day where they would just have like one-off seasons. You think Hawaii...
Oh my God, Gary Anderson was there.
Hawaii,
wow.
Back in the day with Timmy Chang and Colt Brennan, like those type of teams, they had some great teams. And then
rest in peace.
Know, obviously, huh? Boise State has had great success. And then you had that one off with like Utah State having good teams, Nevada with Kaepernick when they upsetted Boise State. There was always those, you know, because Boise State was the, you know, the standard, but they always had like a competitor or like some competition going against them.
Yeah.
Utah, when they were in the Mountain West, they obviously had the run as well.
That's when the
was the Urban Meyer Alex Smith team. They were in the Mountain West.
Did they go to the Sugar Bowl and beat Bama?
No, they beat Pittsburgh.
Oh.
They beat Pittsburgh, and they don't remember what bowl game. It was one of the BCS games.
I think it was the Sugar, or no, maybe.
That was the Sugar against Alabama. I think it was the Fiesta Bowl, maybe, against Pittsburgh. I'd have to look that up, but it was the Alex Smith team. Or no, that was the Troy Johnson team, maybe. Oh, man.
Wow, now you're going way back on me.
Yeah, Urban Meyer, though. That was Urban Meyer with Utah.
2004, 2005, somewhere around there. But Gary Anderson was at Utah State through 2012 before getting the Wisconsin job in 2013.
It was the Fiesta Bowl 2005. Alex Smith, Utah Utes, they crushed Pittsburgh 35-7.
When did they play Alabama, or am I just making that up?
No, you're not making that up.
Didn't they play him in a Sugar Bowl?
Yes, they did. In the 2009 Sugar Bowl, that was the Troy Johnson year, and Utah won that game 31-17.
Yeah.
Brian Johnson, sorry, not Troy Johnson.
Interesting. Okay. Man.
That was a John Parker Wilson, Mark Ingram led Alabama team.
Down year for them. Sugar Bowl. Gary Anderson was at Utah State, then Wisconsin, then Oregon State. Something about Oregon State getting coaches from or executives from bigger programs just doesn't work out, right? Here comes F. King Fitzgerald from LSU. Oh, I want that Oregon State presidency. Oh, I wonder why. Gary Anderson comes from Wisconsin. Oh, I want that Oregon State job. Huh? I wonder why. And certainly doesn't leave Oregon State in any
in any good standing by the time that he was done. I mean, that Oregon State was a mess by the time Gary was done with it.
Think about, I mean, just, I know we all hate Jonathan Smith and Alan Corvallis, but
yeah, it's a strong word. Just
I think a lot of fans hate Jonathan Smith, but the job that he did when he took over that program is insane. Because think about it, when he was at Washington, it wasn't like he was a highly touted like head coach prospect. It was kind of like, oh, he went to Oregon State, cool, he'll take this job.
Yeah, I mean, he was affiliated with Chris Peterson, and people liked the play caller for Chris Peterson. But it wasn't like such a dynamic offense that was like, oh my God, Jonathan Smith, right, the next whiz kid of college football.
No, it wasn't.
Because that's not really what Jonathan Smith is all about anyway. You know, it's more meat and potatoes and consistency than it is Joe Brady 2019 LSU.
But it wasn't like a slam dunk hire, I didn't think, when they made the hire. It was like, yeah, it makes a lot of sense because he went to Oregon State and, you know, he did lead a successful Washington offense, but it's not as if, you know, he's this guy that's going to be a guaranteed slam dunk as the head coach. And then he turned out to be an absolute slam dunk for the Beavers.
Yeah. Dan Lanning also talking about Dylan Gabriel's experience helping the program.
Yeah, Dylan's done a great job, you know, as well as, you know, a couple of our other quarterbacks on our roster have done a really good job. But what Dylan has in experience and maturity, it really shows up on the field, right? It's a guy that takes care of the ball, certainly can throw the tight throws. But when you protect the ball, it gives you a chance to win. You can protect the ball and get your ball to explosive playmakers. Well, now you got a real chance. So Dylan's done a great job of that. I think his experience in the game is really paying off. You know, that's something that you can see that it's not like it's his first rodeo, and that shows up at the practice field every day.
You know, if Dylan Gabriel hits, Stephen, and he's a Heisman finalist, if I tell you Dylan Gabriel's a Heisman finalist, how do you think Oregon's year went?
11-1 minimum. Minimum, 11-1.
Top four seed.
Yeah, I mean, maybe not. They may not win the Big Ten. Like, they may have lost the Big Ten title game. I could see that. But they're in the Big Ten championship game, and so they're definitely in the college football playoff. So they probably are going to be, you know, a top five team in the college football playoff rankings, but they may not have that bye week in the first round.
That would be a little bit disappointing if they beat Ohio State in the regular season and lose in a Big Ten title game and not get a top four seed. Because to your point, the conference championship game winners get those byes,
right?
So in the Power Four. So you got to win that game.
There's going to be a team, you know, like Utah or Florida State, who's number 12 in the nation, but they get a bye week in that college football playoff because they win the ACC or Big 12, where the Big 10 and SEC, they're going to have numerous teams in the top 10 that are going to have either have home games or even have to go on the road in the first round and play a game just to get to the second round.
So if you're Oregon, would you rather lose the regular season game at home and still beat Ohio State, if that's the team you face, in Indy to get that top four seed?
That's tough, man. For me, I would rather have the bye. I would rather have the bye in the college football playoff, but I know people that are going to, if they're going to that Duck game at Austin Stadium, they're going to want to win that game.
Well, and think of the reaction on Dan Lanning if he loses that game.
Oh, there's going to be
the stakes will be so high. I mean, he's not going anywhere.
Dan Lanning would be insanely just off too. Like he's a good coach that has brought in a bunch of players, and they're going to be really good for so long. But if they lose that game to Ohio State, the narrative around him is going to be just out of this world. It's going to be so annoying.
He can win the big games. Can he win the biggest games? He has not won the biggest of the big games yet.
We're just going to push the goalpost back farther and farther until he wins the national title. Well, he can't win two of them.
No, he can't win two.
Can he win back-to-back titles? I don't think
With the NIL money he's getting, he should be winning two national titles every year. That's the expectation around Dan Lanning. We'll bounce a break and come back. Junior newbie Stephen Vaughn in for John Canzano here on the Bald-Faced Truth.
Got the home of the truth. Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
We were kicking it around on the show yesterday. What do you think Oregon's toughest game is going to be outside of the Ohio State game on October 12th, or at least the biggest game before they get to Ohio State? What is going to be their toughest test? And, you know, I was kind of thinking it'd be Michigan State on that Friday night before. I'm still going to go with Michigan State, Stephen, but the week three game with Oregon State on the road in their first true road game of the year, where they only have to, you know, travel a handful of miles to Reser Stadium, I think I might have undersold a little bit the kind of atmosphere and the hostility the Ducks will be up against that day in Reser. I still think Michigan State, though, will be a tougher team to face when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I think you're right.
That could look really bad by the time we get there, but I don't know, man. I think Childs is good.
I do, too. I think I think Aiden Childs maybe next season even. Once Jonathan Smith gets a whole recruiting class in there and gets some transfer portal guys in there, Childs could be a guy who we're looking at as a dark horse for a Heisman, if as long as Michigan State can win some games. But I think he's that good. I think he's an NFL guy that scouts are looking at, that are loving, and they think that he has a lot of potential. I just don't think that they're quite there year number one. I think it's not quite the Oregon State season year one for Jonathan Smith. But they lost a lot off of a team that wasn't very good. So it's going to be a long rebuilding process for Michigan State. The Oregon State game is interesting. They have to beat San Diego State for me. If they lose that San Diego State game, that makes it lose so much luster and so much of the anticipation with the Civil War. But if they can go 2-0, beat Idaho State, beat San Diego State, and then they're hosting Oregon, it could be, you know, a game for a half, maybe a game for three quarters, but I don't know. I just think Oregon is just going to out-talent Oregon State in that one. You know, even with Oregon State defensively, should be pretty good. I just think that Oregon offense is going to be clicking. So I don't know. I want to think Oregon State's going to put up a fight, but it's hard for me to say that right now.
Where do you think the spread is on the Sparty game? Because we know it's, what, around 17 for the Civil War?
Yeah, I would say probably around, well, it's at home, too. It's got to be higher than that. It's got to be 20, 21.
So Michigan State's really down is what you're saying.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think that's, I'm curious to see what it looks like when we get to, you know, late October. But between the Michigan State game and the Oregon State game, trying to figure out which one is going to be a tougher test for Oregon ahead of Ohio State. I still think it's Michigan State, but who the heck knows at that point. Bruce Feldman, talking about Arizona. Now, this is a team I kind of brought up yesterday as, oh, Arizona, they're number 21 in the AP poll. They've got a first-year head coach. I know the quarterback's back. I know Teteroya McMillan is back. But how much should we be believing in, you know, the hype around Arizona Wildcat football as a top 25 team in the country? Bruce Feldman talking about that.
From everything I've heard out of Tucson, Noah Fifita was looking at going, following Jed Fish to Seattle, and Teteroa wanted to stay. He's a phenomenal receiver. I mean, he's as good as there is in college football, unreal ball skills. They do have to replace Jonah Coleman, who is a really physical running back. He did go up to UW. Some big-time offensive linemen led by Jonah Savanaya. Takario Davis, as you said, is a 6'3", 6'4", cornerback. He's a pretty special talent. You know, they're a legit top 25 team. A little bit different offense. Obviously, you know, I know, Sam, you were around Dino Babers back in the day. You know, now he's the OC. There'll be a lot of elements of the old Arizona offense, but I think you'll see some of the wrinkles of what Dino Babers was doing at Syracuse. They're going to be explosive.
Teteroya McMillan, certainly a great player, but Arizona was one of those teams, Stephen, where last year, you know, they gave USC all they could handle in that double overtime, maybe it went triple overtime, in that overtime game in the Coliseum. And then you called it. You said, hey, there's a path for Arizona, who I think was like 3-3 at the time. You said, this is a team that I don't know if they lose again. And then they went on this epic win streak and nearly backdoored their way to the Pac-12 title game. They were in it until the very last weekend. I mean, that's how well their backup quarterback at the time, remember, they started with Jaden Delora. Noah Fifita played last year. He played great football. So to get him back and McMillan back, I mean, that's a great place to start if you're Brent Brennan and the Wildcats. I still think it's a little bit, you know, it caught my attention to see them at number 21 in a preseason poll. I mean, that only has had to have happened a handful of times in the last 25 years that Arizona has been a preseason AP top 25 football team.
Yeah, in Arizona last season, they were 3-1 And then they just went up in a crazy part of their schedule. They played Washington, who was top 10. USC, who was top 10. Then they were on the road at Wazoo. And then they played Oregon State at home in that game. And then they played UCLA, who was ranked as well, at Colorado. Then they were at against Utah, who was ranked. It was six out of seven opponents were ranked when they played them. And they won
Pac-12
all,
was really good, man.
And they lost to Washington, lost to USC. But they won 44-6 at Washington State. And I think I remember going to you. They were playing Oregon State that next week. Now, Jonathan Smith kind of messed up on the old fake field goal there. But
oh, I've got a good idea.
Great idea.
Let's run a fake field goal twice.
But Arizona,
they won't know what happened.
Arizona got that win over Oregon State, and I looked at the schedule and said they could be good the rest of this season, and they were with Jed Fish. Now Brennan comes in, but I think with McMillan and Fifita coming back, that's huge. Like, you at least have that part of your offense. You can figure out a running game. There's going to be some explosiveness, and the Big 12 is wide open. I think right now Utah is the favorite, and they should be. But Arizona definitely has a puncher's chance in that one to win that Big 12 and get to the college football playoff. They have some talent that returned from last season who won 10 games, including your quarterback. And I think that's the most important position. So they're going to be right in the Big 12. The Big 12 is wide open.
Wide open.
I can't wait.
Probably
for
the most fun. Because you called it mediocrity yesterday, I think you said. It's probably a little bit more appealing than just a bunch of mediocrity and who comes out of the... You know, it's not like the AFC South most years.
No,
it's a bunch of good teams, but no one's really great. But right, it's like going to be exciting football.
None of these teams can win the national championship, but like eight teams can make the college football playoff.
Right, exactly. So that's going to be a lot of fun to see what your Mark's conference delivers in year one of the expanded format. 5 at 5 is coming up next on the Bald Faced Truth.
BFFT. Now, built by High Caliber Millwrights, in for John Canzano, here's Judah Newby and Stephen Vaughn with the Bald-Faced Truth.
Well, it's always a great day that you can say goodbye to Root Sports and the Portland Trailblazers. So, already feeling good today. Judah Newby and Stephen Vaughn with you here on the Bald-Faced Truth. And we made it, Stephen. We made it to the end of the Blazers-Root Sports deal. I mean, we were going to make it next year, but... With 1 year left on the deal, the Blazers parting ways with Root Sports. About time.
It is. We made it through the old, the Comcast, NBC Sports Northwest. We made it through all of them. Now we've made it through Root Sports. Hopefully they do the right decision. They make it very accessible to all the fans, whether that's direct-to-consumer or, you know, local TV, KGW, whatever it is. They got to do something. They got to make it accessible for the fans. The fans have been through a lot. They've been through enough of the losing and the bad product on the court. At least make the product accessible to the fans of the younger generations. I feel like that's really important right now. You get, you know, the Blazers always looking for good PR. Like, that would be great PR. Not just good PR, great PR right there to make it accessible because of what they've done.
I mean, the damage has already been done having a bad product with terrible distribution. So now you can get better distribution and a bad product, but people will still celebrate the distribution part of it. Like, people will get excited about this.
Yeah, and when the season comes around, you know, like, you're going to watch the first 20 games of the season. You'll watch that, and then...
No question, I'll watch that.
You know, then if you're 5-15, then you may tune in and out until they play maybe the Bucks or something like that, and Dame comes back. You'll watch that game. You'll pick and choose your games, but...
They got one game on national TV last year. That was the Bucks game.
Dame game.
That's it.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, you're going to watch. If there's nothing on TV, I'll just flip on the Blazers and have it on in the background. I think that's just important just to kind of, you know, provide that and be around people and have that in your lives, just that you are watching the Blazers and have them in your sports, your sports landscape.
So an over-the-air network, in all likelihood, I think Sean Hykins reporting that the Blazers will be moving to an over-the-air network, but which network it is has yet to be determined. Will it be KPTV? Will it be KGW? Even though I think KGW has the NHL Seattle Kraken. Do people really want to watch Seattle NHL hockey down here? I mean, that's not really my niche. I'm sure there's a lot of people that are fired up about that.
Yeah, Canzano said, according to his source, the team is in active negotiations with a new partner. Didn't say who it is, but... they are in negotiations right now. So, it could be...
Well, the negotiations must be going well enough for them to...
Say goodbye to Root.
Say goodbye publicly to Root Sports, which was really Root Sports Plus. That was the other thing that drove everybody crazy.
Drove me crazy. I know that.
Oh, that was
trying to
terrible.
Find it at the station. I have to literally Google it every single day. when I know, I turned it to Root Sports and the Kraken are on there.
Yeah.
And I got to find Root Sports Plus. I got to Google it every single time. I don't remember four numbers. That's tough.
So the it's an exciting time. So eager to see where the Blazers end up landing. But if it's a situation when your boy's got a digital antenna and I'm going to be able to watch Oregon State on the CW and I'm going to be able to watch the Trailblazers over the air.
It's going
to
be a lovely Saturday.
I'm really happy. I'm really happy. It's like, this is like 20 years ago, all coming back.
You're going to get the Ducks on.
Except
what?
I've never been able to watch, well, I guess, whenever Oregon State has been on Fox, which, by the way, last year, Oregon State was on Fox for their Washington State road game, their conference opener.
Yes.
And I remember at the time thinking, when was the last time Oregon State played on Fox? Oregon's been on Fox a bunch, and I'm talking big Fox, right? Channel 12 here. In Portland, at least, and wherever you're listening over the network, wherever you get your local Fox affiliate. The last time the Beavers played on Fox prior to the Washington State game last year was 2012, I believe, at Stanford. They went a decade. It may have been 2013. I think it was 2013. It was either 10 years or 11 years. 11 years between playing on Fox for Oregon State. And to be honest, Stephen, if there was ever a more, simple commentary on why the Beavers are getting left behind in realignment, it's that. Yeah, they bid on ESPN. Yeah, they had a bowl game on ABC once or twice. But to not get a national window on Fox in a decade is a long, long time. And it came at just the wrong time in this wave of conference realignment. The ironic part is they got on Fox against UCLA, against Washington State. Their game against Washington was Saturday Night Football on ABC. They got on Fox against Oregon as well in the Civil War. Like, they got on Fox a bunch last year because they were a really good football team for most of the season. But it took over a decade between games being on Fox for the Oregon State Beavers. That's bad.
That's the Gary Anderson effect right there. It's going to be
a little bit on Mike.
It'll be a good Saturday, though. Oregon will play on CBS. Oregon State will be on CW. And then the Blazers, be on some other channel we'll be able to watch.
Yeah. Rip City Remix will be there, too. And
look at that. We get four local games.
We'll get NASCAR on somewhere.
And then Live Golf afterwards.
And then take care of Live Golf.
Then we'll get a Syracuse at, Duke game as well.
That's right. Can't forget about wherever Tom Brenneman goes, Got to turn that on. Because who the heck knows what will happen when Tommy B.
What
is he going to say next? They should promote it that way. Over under games Tom Brenneman calls for the CW before saying something terrible. All right, let's do the 5 at 5. Five things going on today.
The 5 at 5. Number one.
Number one, Stephen, a trade in the NFL. You see this? Jerod Mayo and New England Patriot edge Matt Judon. They were kind of having an animated conversation last week. Judon reportedly not happy with his role or his contract on the team. The Patriots have traded Pro Bowler Matthew Judon to the Atlanta Falcons, which is hilarious because we were like, the Falcons, they need edge help. Oh, they need another rusher at number 8, which they did, obviously. Why didn't they take Dallas Turner? They took Michael Penix. I hope he can rush the passer because that's what they need. Well, they took Penix, and now they've traded for Matthew Judon from the New England Patriots for a 3rd-round draft pick. Judon hadn't been practicing during training camp looking for a new contract. The Falcons and Judon have not hammered out a contract for next season yet, but they plan to work toward one before the start of the season. Judon is about to turn 32 tomorrow. 4-time Pro Bowler. He had a career-high 15.5 sacks a couple years ago and missed most of last year with a torn bicep. But the Falcons, Stephen, they've needed pass rush help for a long time. Did you know that they have not had a player get double-digit sacks since 2016? Vic Beasley.
It's wild.
And so now they've traded for Matthew Judon.
Yeah, that was the good move for them. Year they made the Super Bowl.
It was, indeed.
But, does it make the Michael Penix Jr. pick better? Does it make it look better now that they got rid of a 3rd-round pick and they get a guy who is established You know, Matthew Judon is a legitimate pass rusher. If you would have drafted Dallas Turner or someone else, they may not have worked out. Does it make the Penix Jr. pick look better now that they address their need of getting a pass rusher?
I would say very slightly. Only because Judon's going to be expensive. You have to re-sign him. Otherwise, what's the point? You know, you only get 1 year out of a guy for a third-round pick. Third-round picks kind of matter. So you got to sign him, which is going to come with a cost. And it still does not make the logic make sense of Kirk for $100 million and then Mike with the 8th overall pick and not play him. That part still won't make sense. But you got a good edge rusher for this season. If he stays healthy, right? Last year he wasn't healthy. So slightly better, but I still have a ways to go to come around on that. But Penix, by the way, have you seen any preseason Penix?
No, I have not.
Okay. I haven't seen him either. I gotta check him out because I think he got some run last week. Because he's going to be a really good player. He's good right now. He could be a really good player right now if they didn't have Kirkers.
Number two.
Well, a team that could use Michael Penix Jr. is the Minnesota Vikings, as their rookie quarterback, J.J. McCarthy, is out for the season with a torn meniscus in his right knee. The injury happened yesterday. We didn't know what exactly would happen with the surgery type of thing, but it has been announced that the rookie quarterback will be out until next season after he will undergo surgery today on that right knee. Sam Darnold expected to be the starter now as he has a one-year deal in Minnesota. The Vikings also have Nick Mullins and Jaren Hall on their roster. J.J. McCarthy is going to be the fourth first-round quarterback in the century who does not play a regular season game as a rookie. The other three guys that didn't play in their first seasons as a first-round pick, Jordan Love with the Packers back in 2020. The Washington R-words, Jason Campbell, back in 2005. He did not play a snap in his first season. And Carson Palmer, Cincinnati Bengals, number one overall pick, 2003, did not play a snap. So J.J. McCarthy joins that infamous club.
That's rough. So Rodgers played as a rookie then?
Apparently, yeah.
I was thinking Rodgers might be on that list because obviously he sat for a long time too. But yeah, that's unfortunate. I think of the scenarios in which J.J. McCarthy was injured for the whole year, this is probably the best case scenario. It's an injury that probably doesn't need to have him out for the whole year, but they're going to just make it anyway just to
it
make
it. It does seem like they're playing it extra cautious.
Very cautious. With him. But did you find out anything on those Derek Carr rumors to the Vikings? Or
I think it was false.
Okay.
Don't worry about it.
a false Derek Carr report. Probably won't be the last one.
Number three.
Stick with the NFL. Matthew Stafford left practice today with a hamstring issue. Hamstring tightness for Matty Stafford. Didn't finish the joint practice today against the Cowboys. So the Rams turned to their backup quarterback, Stephen. Do you know who the Rams' backup quarterbacks are to Matthew Stafford?
Jimmy Garoppolo and Stetson Bennett.
Yes. You're exactly right. I thought that might stump you, but you did remember Jimmy Garoppolo was with the Rams.
I just saw a tweet about Jimmy Garoppolo the other day, but he's suspended for the first couple of games. And then,
of course.
And then Stetson Bennett threw like three picks in his preseason debut.
Yeah, so Mike LaFleur, who is Matt's brother, he's the offensive coordinator with the Rams. He said, Stafford operates at a world-class level, but we know that every rep is going to be valuable for him, no matter how many plays he's had. Unfortunately, he had some tightness. So Jimmy G and Stetson Bennett get the reps against the Cowboys this week for the Rams in their joint practice. And if you know, the Cowboys do their training camp down there in Oxnard, and the Rams obviously close by them as well, doing their training camp in SoCal. So those two always like to get together in the last few years for a little joint ball. And it's been working out, but Stafford probably needs a day or two to get himself back together.
Number four.
The Paris Olympics just ended. Next up, 2028 Summer Olympics is in L.A. And Dr. Dre, you know, he's famously from Los Angeles. He wants to perform at the Olympics, but he doesn't just want to perform musically. He wants to perform in an actual Olympic event. He told Entertainment Tonight that he wants to participate in the archery event. He says that he is back into it. He actually was part of his junior high team back in the day. He was on the archery team, and he lost some interest, but he said he's back at it as his son had bought him targets and bow and arrow for Father's Day. Dre said, I have it set up in the backyard, and I heard qualifying for the Olympics is 77 feet. I practice at 90. He says he's dead serious that he wants to try this. The 59-year-old did say that. He said, I'm going to try out for the Olympics in 2028, so we'll see if Dr. Dre can make the U.S. archery team. That'd be pretty sick.
I love that. Dr. Dre performed at the Super Bowl in L.A., right, a few years ago?
Dr. Dre with the gold medal in archery.
That would be awesome. He should just get the gold medal anyway. I mean, let's not try to, you know, I don't want him to embarrass himself. How old did you say he was?
He is 59.
Interesting.
Well, the shooting guy that just stood there with his, you know, his hands in his pockets and looked like he didn't care, that guy made it seem like everyone can just be a shooter. It wasn't archery, but it was just, I forget what event it was, but it was just the, you know,
he was so
European guy that just stood there.
Cash.
Yeah.
He's like, okay.
But yeah, Dre, you know, I imagine he'll probably do something with the Olympics, as Snoop and Dre were both a part of this Olympics, and now it's going to be in L.A. Why would they not bring them back, obviously, to kind of represent their city and stuff like that? So I don't think Dre's going to compete in the Olympics. I'd be pretty sick, though. I'd be rooting for that.
Number five.
He should be in breaking, but then again, they probably won't have breaking at the Olympics in 4 years. Number five, Wisconsin has a decision on their starting quarterback. Of course, Big Ten Wisconsin and Oregon's opponent coming up on November 16th in Camp Randall. They are going with Tyler Van Dyke. The transfer from Miami officially has won the starting quarterback job at Wisconsin. Offensive coordinator Phil Longo announced the decision. And Longo and head coach Luke Fickell get their experienced quarterback to lead the team into a new era of the Big Ten. I kind of assumed that Tyler Van Dyke was going to be the guy, so maybe this is more performative than anything, but Van Dyke got the starting job over redshirt sophomore Braden Locke. It looks like it's just kind of making it official. The new guy in town, Tyler Van Dyke, the former Miami Mario Cristobal quarterback, now will be Wisconsin's starting quarterback this fall, Stephen.
Yeah, Van Dyke had some nice moments for Miami in his career, but he was up and down, had some injury problems as well. Not surprising that he's going to be the starting quarterback. I think it's the right choice, though. It is interesting. If he can stay healthy, you know, the Ducks do travel to Wisconsin late in the season. We'll see how that Wisconsin offense, they've had some struggles the first two seasons under Fickell, trying to revamp it from being, you know, a ground pound, Ron Dane, Melvin Gordon, Jonathan Taylor, all these type of big running backs, to now they're trying to air it out a little bit more. So it's been a little bit of a transition, but Tyler Van Dyke is the right choice at quarterback for the Wisconsin Badgers, and the Ducks play him later on in the season. So that'll be interesting to see if he has that offense rolling, because that could be one of those games that we talk about. You know, it's the 11th game of the season, right before the Washington game, going to be at Wisconsin. That place is going to be just wild and crazy and lit, and they're going to be jumping around. It's a tough atmosphere over there in Wisconsin.
They also have a home game early in the year against Alabama.
Yeah.
Can't wait for that.
True home game against Bama.
Alabama, September 14th, 9 a.m. Fox. They open the season August 30th on a Friday night against Western Michigan, then South Dakota, then that Alabama game. And then their Big Ten opener, Wisconsin's, is at USC on September 28th. So they get a couple of weeks between Alabama and USC because they have a bye week in between, but those are their two games in a row, versus Alabama, then bye week, and then at USC. So we'll learn a lot about Wisconsin early in the season and just how good Tyler Van Dyke is. By the way, speaking of Miami, I was talking to this with you earlier. Damian Martinez is going to have a massive year. And I think I forgot about how good Damian Martinez is and just how much Mario Cristobal wants to run the football. But the former Duck coach and the former Beaver running back are now married, and Damian is going to get a ton of touches in Coral Gables this year.
Yeah, I mean, it sucks that Damian Martinez left Oregon State, but it was understandable. But at least he's going to a situation that, you're right, is Mario Cristobal is going to want to run the football, and he's going to have a threat of Cam Ward as well as the quarterback. Like, you know, Ward's a solid quarterback. It's called solid college quarterback who people have a lot of high hopes for. You know, he's gotten a lot of Heisman buzz as well.
Who would you rather have, Cam Ward, Shedeur Sanders?
Shedeur.
I'd rather have Cam.
I'd rather have Shador. But I think you can't really go wrong on that one. I think they're both really good quarterbacks.
So you do?
I do.
Sounds like you think Cam is okay, but not great.
I think he's a good quarterback. I think he's a really good quarterback. That's why Miami wanted him.
You'd say the same about Shador.
Yeah. I think they're both really good.
But you'd prefer Shador.
College quarterbacks. Yeah. I don't know about the NFL, but I think it'll be a good, nice threat that, Damian Martinez is going to have Cam Ward throwing the football behind him. It's going to open up the running lanes for him.
Yeah.
Miami has a good offensive line, too. They brought a lot of it back. So Damian's in a good spot. So at least, if he's going to leave Oregon State, get to a spot where you're going to get the ball a lot. Seems like Miami, he will.
It's going to be a fun year. We'll see if... is Mario on the hot seat, you think?
If they lose week one to Florida, yeah.
He is their chosen one.
If they lose week one to Florida, yes.
That's right. Week one
and
against Florida.
At Florida in the swamp. Miami's only like a 2.5, 2-point favorite. That's, man, that game is out of a job. Billy Napier, Mario Cristobal.
Hot seat
those
city.
Those fans are going to just hate their coach if they lose that game.
Hot seat city. Yeah, Miami. And then they'll have Florida State somewhere on the schedule, won't they? Actually, yeah. Miami hosts Florida State October 26th. So they play Florida and Florida State this year.
Yep.
Boy, that state, it's going to be lit.
Yeah.
College football.
There's a lot of expectations for Miami this season.
There should be.
They spent a lot of money there.
Yeah. What, Diaz, I think, the guy down there with all the money. And
can Mario get out of his own way with some play call and stuff and game management stuff?
Game management. Boy, that Georgia Tech loss, as epic as it gets, that came on the other day. And I was like, oh my word. Incredible.
To go along with the Stanford game with Oregon a couple years before that.
That's up there, 2018. Conference opener against Stanford.
That's it. That's a
game day was in town.
If Mario can just get out of his own way with the game management stuff and just let the players do their own thing, they may win 10-11 games.
Do you think he changes?
No.
Best indicator of future behavior is past behavior?
Yeah.
Dude, no one hardlines like Mario Cristobal.
I like Mario. I think he's a great recruiter.
Clenching teeth and clenching fists and just pounding your way through adversity.
He's a great guy.
Great recruiter.
But
Mirabal, I mean, there too.
The game management stuff just is a question.
Oof.
Still is. And until he changes, it's always going to be a question in my mind.
We have to watch week one against Florida.
That's going to be a fun game.
We have to get our must-watch games in order, and that's up there for me.
Definitely. Week one, that's one of the highlight games, man, because I feel like that's going to say a lot for the season. Florida has maybe the toughest schedule in all of America. Like, their win total is only 5.5 because they play just a bunch of ranked teams. But, man, if they lose to Miami that week one, a true home game, Napier's probably not lasting a couple of weeks after that. He's probably gone, and Miami will have some momentum going into their conference season.
Well, Florida hasn't recovered since Oregon State smacked them upside the head.
That's right.
That's really what did Napier in. And then the Utah game, right, was their next game, the season opener the next year. So they haven't been able to recover since those Beaver Utes losses.
And think about the way Florida's fallen off. They beat Utah in that first game with Billy Napier and Anthony Richardson at home, interception right at the end zone.
Great game.
And you thought, man, this is the guy. Like, Richardson's the guy, Napier's the guy. They're going to build something there. And it has gone downhill ever since that game.
Yeah. Unfortunate for them. And, Napier's dad was a longtime coach. And I remember when they got him from Lafayette, that was it.
He was Lafayette, right?
Yeah,
he was definitely Lafayette. He was a hot coaching prospect coming up. So
yeah, but it doesn't always work out.
It seemed like a great fit, too. Offensive-minded guy who was going to bring the athletes back into Florida. It just has not worked out.
You say their win total is 5.5?
Yeah, their schedule is insanely tough.
But if they win 6 games, he's probably still fired.
And they're a good, talented team. That's the problem. It's just their schedule is insanely tough. They have Miami. Then there's Samford at home, which is fine. Texas A&M at Mississippi State. UCF, who is a good team. I think that they have a chance to win the Big 12.
Is that still Malzahn?
Yes. At Tennessee, Kentucky, Georgia, at Texas, LSU, Ole Miss, at Florida State.
Oh, my gosh. That's brutal.
So Florida State ranked in the top 10, Ole Miss in the top 10, Texas in the top 10, Georgia in the top 10. Tennessee is what, top 15? Texas A&M is top 25, and then Miami is top 15.
That's brutal.
That's 7 of your 12 games against, top 20 teams.
I guess that's expansion. Do you think we're going to see more of that schedule difficulty because you're adding teams like Texas and Oklahoma there? You're adding teams like the Big Ten is adding. And your schedule is just because of your conference, it's going to be like, oh my God, like it's incredibly difficult.
I think there's going to be years where you get lucky and you kind of don't face those teams. There's teams in the ACC that have really good schedules where they don't face Clemson and Florida State and, you know, Miami. Like there's teams that have that. But then there's also teams like Florida who faces all of the tough teams in one season. So I think it's going to be very lucky, like for teams like Oregon, who you play in the Big Ten. Like you may have a season where you don't play Ohio State or Michigan or Penn State, and you get a team like Wisconsin or Rutgers or Iowa or Maryland, and you got to be excited about that. You don't have to face Ohio State every year.
Yeah. Well, Oregon avoids Penn State this year, but I don't think they'll avoid them next year, right? They'll get Penn State next year, but they might avoid Ohio State next year, you know, or Michigan or, you know, one of those dominant powers. But ultimately, you probably plan on seeing them at some point in Indianapolis at the end of the season.
But it makes it easier, the fact that it's a 12-team playoff now. So you might
see them in the playoff, too.
You are afforded to lose a game, possibly even two, for some of these teams.
You can lose two.
If you're Georgia, you're Ohio State, you're Alabama, you can lose two games.
You can lose two. Yeah.
I think Oregon probably falls in that, depending on who you lose to.
Depending on when and who.
If Oregon loses to Ohio State and Michigan, I think they're still in the playoff.
Well, in that sense, right? They've won the conference championship, right? You're saying they lose the regular season games to Ohio State and Michigan?
Yeah.
Then they win they're a top four seed still.
Well, yeah, but if you don't make
actually to your point, no, maybe they don't get to the Big Ten title game. You mean? I see what you're saying.
They'll still be in. They could still be an at large.
They'll be a 10, right? They'll be a 10 or 11 or 12. Right. You're not putting a two loss Oregon team out of the playoff.
Who lost to two really good teams? One on the road at Michigan
by a field goal in each, where you're going for it on fourth down.
Like you,
because that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. But you wouldn't put them out of the playoff like that,
right?
That's why it is good if the team with tougher schedules, they can afford to lose a game. But
there's more margin of error with your schedule,
right? But if you get lucked out and you have a schedule where you're avoiding some of these top teams, you could sneak in with 11-1 record. Maybe you're not that good, but you just kind of snuck in there.
The Beavers probably have to go undefeated to get a,
I would think so,
CFP invite.
Maybe just a loss. If they lose to Oregon and they're somewhat competitive, they're 11-1.
That might do it.
That would do it.
Depending on how good Oregon is.
It depends on how their game against Oregon goes. If they lose by 30-plus, no. But if they're within two scores, I could see an 11-1 Beaver team. If they're looking good at the end of the year, they can get a nod in there.
Depending on how good Boise State is, too.
Right, because that would be a good win. At Boise State's a good win.
Which, by the way, Fox, Black Friday, 9 in the morning.
That's kind of rough for the Beavs, huh?
It is rough, but it's also kind of badass.
I mean, sick. I can't wait to
9 a.m. Black Friday on Fox.
Can't wait to wake up and just watch football all day.
Dude.
We work on Black Friday?
Oh, heck no.
Heck no.
I'm not working. Are you working?
No, if we do, I'm calling in.
No. I mean, I will say, I wish we always would work on Black Friday if it was a Civil War day. There's nothing like the Civil War on a Black Friday. Yeah. Civil War Black Friday always was my favorite day of the year. Still, even on a Saturday. But there's something about playing the Civil War the day after Thanksgiving that is just so freaking special.
You love the Civil War on Black Friday on a Saturday.
Well, Saturday is good, but the Black Friday Civil Wars are the best, in my opinion. You don't get better than playing the day after Thanksgiving. Yeah, exactly. No, but because I think I went back and checked. The Civil War was played on a Black Friday, I think, like maybe 7 times since 2000.
Do you think
so? It doesn't happen that often, but I would rather have the Civil War Black Friday than Saturday. The day after Thanksgiving is way more cool.
Do you think because the game's on September 14th that it's going to lose some luster?
Yeah.
Even if Oregon State's 2-0. Both teams undefeated at Racer Stadium.
I'm pissed, okay? I am pissed that the game's in September. I'll say it. It totally changes it to me. But I will grant you this. The game was going to feel way different anyway, right? Because of realignment. So if it was going to feel different, you might as well have it in September.
It's going to feel really weird when it's at Oregon and Oregon has the Big Ten logo on their field. Like, that's going to be really weird, I think, to watch Oregon State play at Oregon with the Big Ten logo.
That will be odd.
Like, does Oregon State still have the Pac-12 logo on their field?
Probably. You can sell sponsorships now, right? And put them on your field?
Yeah.
Ohio State's been doing that already with Safe Flight.
Oregon State's been doing that already with Reaser. They've been finding a way around it. Oregon State.
Yeah, Florida International's doing it with Pitbull.
That's pretty cool. Good for them. That's a perfect fit.
Great fit.
Worldwide, right? Mr. Worldwide. Florida International Pitbull.
Pitbull Stadium.
I think it will be weird. Yeah, the game loses. I will say this. The game loses luster because of realignment.
It does.
It probably it loses more of its luster because of that than the calendar move. But I'm still kind of pissed about the calendar move.
But I think they get it back if Oregon State can stay competitive.
And they can get it back the luster?
Yeah. If Oregon State plays Oregon close and lose by 7, and then Oregon State gets some momentum going into the next season, I'm going to be pumped for the game next year.
When was the last, blowout in that game? 2018, the Ducks, I know the Ducks housed Oregon State in 2018 because Travis Dye ran for a million yards in Corvallis. 2019, I think was decently, 2019 was 24-10. It was a boring game. 2020.
Well, last year it was a blowout.
That's true.
2018.
Yeah, last year I'd say was a blowout. I was thinking more 2017, 69-10 blowout.
2018, Oregon won 55-15.
Yeah, Travis Dye went crazy.
And then 17, it was 69-10.
That was the largest margin of victory in the rivalry's history.
14, Oregon won 47-19. But then you get the great ones 2013, 36-35.
That was pretty epic, right? Was that Mariota to Josh Huff at the end?
I think so, yeah.
In Corvallis, epic game.
Last Oregon State blowout was 2004, a 50-21 win in Corvallis.
Derek Anderson, right? 2004?
Sounds right.
Yeah. The 2006, 2007, the Beaver win in 07. They stuffed Oregon in overtime to win it. James Rogers, the end around to get inside the pylon in overtime. I think Dan Fouts was on the call for that one. Dan Fouts, I've said this before.
You love Dan Fouts.
You talk about versatile. Did you know, Steven? Dan Fouts, he is doing preseason television for the Chargers. They had their radio guys, Matt Money Smith and Daniel Jeremiah, who do a fantastic job. I love DJ, and Matt Money's pretty good. They're doing Charger preseason TV, and they had Dan Fouts with them in the booth this weekend. Dan Fouts, what a career that guy's had, huh?
Chargers, don't they also have Mina Kimes? Or no, it's the Rams.
The Rams had Mina doing some preseason stuff. I'm not sure if she's still doing it. Maybe she is. It's weird for a Seahawk honk like she is. We love Mina. Mina's one of the best.
Yeah, she's one of you.
Oh, she's one of us.
One of us.
But, Dan Fouts, the playing career that guy had at Oregon and in the NFL, and the guy has been a play-by-play guy for college football on the biggest stages, or close to the biggest stages. A play-by-play guy, Dan Fouts. And he's been an analyst on Monday Night Football and college football and the NFL, and he's still doing it.
And was a baller.
And was an absolute baller, man. And Don Coryell, I think, went into the Hall of Fame recently, too. So that was really cool to see. So, love Dan Fouts, man. Football's almost back, getting fired up. We should get Dan back on the show, or obviously John should. John books his own guests, but get Dan on the show. You know, we always love those conversations. That's what it's all about. All right, we'll bounce a break and come back. Judah Newby and Stephen Vaughn here on the Baldfish Truth.
To the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Blazers no longer on Root Sports, so a day to celebrate to some degree. And we're fired up about that. A over-the-air TV partner is apparently already in negotiations with the Blazers. I guess that makes sense if they're going to publicly say we're leaving Root. But we have yet to figure out exactly which TV network it is. It's an exciting time. Either any of the networks, I think, would do a really good job. But KGW, obviously, the longtime TV provider of Blazer games, at least about 20 a year back when I was a kid, and the playoff games. That was the other thing. You know, when the Blazers were in the playoffs,
they would, you know, you could actually see them on KGW, at least for the first round, right? The first round games, because I think after that it goes all national. But, you know, I remember this was at the end of the KGW run then, but they had the playoff series with Memphis. That was CJ McCollum's kind of breakout series when he was like a, you know, second year, maybe third year player, but a young player. And watching those games on KGW, that only went like five games maybe with a really good Conley, Gasol, Memphis team.
Beno Udra killed the Blazers.
Did not remember that.
Beno? You don't remember Beno?
I do remember Beno Udrich. Udrich or whatever his name. I thought he was a Sacramento guy, but I forgot that he was Memphis. I do remember the Phoenix series, and I think they played Phoenix a couple times, but Jason Richardson torching the Blazers for 42 points in game three of a first round series with Phoenix. Because if memory serves, Portland won game one of that series in Phoenix, and Camby missed a dunk or something like that. What? We were watching the highlights of this not too long ago.
Yeah, Bano in that series, Memphis. Yeah, it was 12 points a game off the bench. He had 20 in game one. I just remember he just crushed the Blazers. Yeah, no, Camby missed a breakaway dunk. They kind of contested him, like they ran after him, but yeah, he missed like a wide open dunk.
In Blazers, the Phoenix series? What year was the Phoenix? I was in high school, I think, so it might have been.
Blazers ended up winning the game, though. Game one.
That was game one. Okay. They won game one. Yeah.
They did.
But
Andre Miller, fun fact, he has three series where he has won game one and lost the series. That's the most ever in anybody in NBA history. Because usually if you win game one, you win the series, historically.
So he puts the stank on you. If you have Andre Miller and you've won game one, you're going to lose the series.
Yep. I just never liked Andre Miller. So
how many times was that with Portland? Obviously, the Phoenix series won.
It was just the one. It happened with them, with Denver, I believe, and then with Philadelphia. Philadelphia won in Orlando, I want to say, back in the day. They won game one.
What is Andre Miller doing now, huh?
Probably just living his best life, man.
He's a great player. Below the rim. Although he could get, did he dunk once or twice?
He had one dunk.
Okay.
In the game where he scored 51, I think, or 52, whatever it was, in Dallas, he had a dunk in that game.
Incredible. Incredible. I got to job shadow a longtime area broadcaster. This was my junior year of high school. This all came back to me the other day because I was watching Nick Batum play for France in the gold medal game. And I was like, my gosh, Nick Batum. How long has he been playing hoops? And I remember this job shadow I had was the fall of, it was the spring of 2010. And Batum was kind of fresh on the scene and one of the newer Blazers and got to meet all the Blazers. Got to meet, Bayless was on that team. Camby was on that team. Shaking hands with Camby and nothing but a towel. Like the dude just, I mean, he's like a 7 foot, what is he, 7'1" maybe, Camby? He's like got his towel on in his locker. I'm like, hey, I'm Judah. He's like, hey, man, I'm Marcus Camby. I'm like, oh, I know. Yeah, this is not awkward at all. With Juwan Howard was on that team. That was a fun Blazers team. But I remember that night they beat the Pacers, and Mike Dunleavy Jr. was on that Pacers team, and the Blazers crushed the Pacers that night at Motor Center. But Marcus Camby, those are some fun teams there in the late 2000s. That made a couple playoff runs, but I guess nothing special. But it was always meaningful still when the Blazers made the playoffs. So you could watch it on KGW.
Gerald Wallace.
Yeah.
He was always part of those teams. Yeah.
No. Crash Wallace.
No.
Then we had Gerald Henderson.
Then they traded Gerald Wallace and got Dame for him. So, and then it turned into a new era.
Yeah. And now we're in another one. How many guys are going to stick around with this era?
Well, it's tough to say.
Who's on the poster this year?
It's Shaden and Scoot.
I like Scoop better. We can go with Scoop.
Scoop. I was thinking Snoop Dogg, and so I
Scoop Dogg.
Scoop Dogg.
Scoop Dogg Henderson.
It's Shaden and Scoot. They gotta be. Maybe Ant.
Okay.
Simons is in a weird spot here.
Who's on the Rise with Us poster?
I love Anthony Simons though. He had a basketball camp in Lincoln when he was so nice there. So
your kiddo went to his.
Yeah. Yeah.
His basketball camp, and he was a good dude.
It's good. I didn't meet him, but I just saw pictures and stuff. He was a great guy. take your time out to, you know, play with the kids. Great time, Anthony.
When I was a kid, you played at Concordia, right?
Hell yeah.
When I was a kid, I went to your stomping grounds for basketball camps. AC Green.
That's right, yeah.
He was so nice. I remember at one of AC Green's basketball camps, I got, there was a little kid that, you know, we were in, I was in what, fourth grade, maybe third grade, at AC Green's basketball camp at Concordia. And I fell to the ground because, you know, I'm not the most coordinated cat of all time. Fell to the ground and a kid stepped on my head. His name was Shaquille. And this little black kid who was actually my size. So he was Shaquille, but he was like this 3-foot guard, just like me. Stepped on my head. I was okay, but good for everybody looking out. They pulled me out of the game. They did concussion protocol even back then. And once I was determined to be okay, AC Green picked me up and threw me over his shoulder like a sack of potatoes.
That's cool. That's cool.
It took me to more medical attention. And I'll always remember that. I just had the time of my life at AC Green's basketball camp.
It is amazing how tall and big like NBA players are. Like, I know football players are huge too, but
huge.
Like, when you're looking at, like, six, you don't realize how big 6'10 is or 6'9 until you actually are standing next to them.
It's just, it's a different.
I mean, I'm 6'2.
It's a different world up there.
Yeah, I'm 6'2, and I feel like such a just a shrimp when I'm around, like, around anybody that's like 6'10.
Who's the tallest person you've been around? It's probably a professional athlete somewhere.
I don't know. I mean, I've played against some really tall players.
But, like, what about at Tahoe? Isn't there some giant NBA guys there?
Yeah, I'm sure that there are. I can't. I mean, I don't know. I played against, let's see. I mean, Kevin Love, I played against. He's probably like 6'9".
Yeah.
I've probably been against some 6'9", 6'10 guys.
Even not met, though, or even not played against them, but just met in life, in passing.
Yeah.
Tallest person you met is probably the people you played against?
Probably, yeah.
I remember going, I was a kiddo and ran into Kevin Love in the airport when he was like a rookie with Minnesota. And I was with my mom checking my bags, and Kevin Love was next to us, and he was wearing flip-flops and the NBA logo on his crew socks. Just white socks, you know, crew
socks
that had Jerry West on them. And I'm like, man, who wears NBA logo? And I'm a kid, like I'm in early high school at this point, maybe. No, I was probably even younger. I was like, who wears NBA? And he was wearing, I kid you not, he was wearing Minnesota Timberwolves gym shorts. And I was like, you know, he had a hat on, you know, he's trying to be low profile. It was a super slow day. It was a dead day, you know, middle of summer, late in the afternoon. So it wasn't like a rush hour or anything, but I started by just looking over. I saw flip-flops, NBA socks, and Timberwolves shorts. And I'm like, oh, who's this guy think he is? Kevin Love? And then I looked up and looked at his face, and I was like, oh my gosh, that's Kevin Love. I was like, hey, I didn't get a picture or anything. I remember really not wanting to be that guy.
Yeah.
Even as like an eighth grader. But I was like, Mom, this is Kevin Love. And it's like, she doesn't know who Kevin Love is, but it was a fun moment.
It is funny to see athletes in the wild, but have you ever worn the NBA socks before?
No.
They are incredibly comfortable. I have a couple pair of NBA socks. I still rock them.
Okay.
I'll show you next time I come in and I wear them.
I'm really intrigued now by these NBA socks.
Yeah,
but I mean, dude, you can't undersell comfy socks.
When I worked for the Blazers, I remember I got some free gear, NBA gear.
That's swag. That qualifies as swag for me. Did you know, so Rob, what's his name? Rob Lowe went to the NFC title game that one year.
Just wore the NFL hat?
Wore the NFL hat. Was it Gosling? Somebody was at the Olympics and was wearing a hat with just the Olympic rings on it, and that's it. And I was like,
just a sports hat.
It's kind of a Rob Lowe move. Although the Olympic logo is, I guess, more understandable because it's more iconic than the NFL logo.
Yeah.
So I get that a little bit. But I was like, you couldn't wear like USA or something?
No, he's just an Olympic fan.
I just like the Olympics, just wearing the Olympic rings on a hat. Like, good for you.
I had a sweet just NBA shirt. It was an NBA logo shirt, and that's all it had on the front of it.
It was just
an NBA logo, and then it got a little, it was kind of small when I bought it, and then it turned really small, then I made it a cutoff, and then I just got rid of it.
Now, were you one of those guys where you had your gym shirts, and then you cut out the armpits all the way down to the waist?
No. I feel like
that's the type of guy you'd be.
No. I would make
you know the guy. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, I turn my shirts into cutoffs. I still do. If I like the shirt, I'll turn it into
and
a
then
cutoff.
Then you cut out the armpit all the way down.
I would never cut it down to the bottom. That's it's very uncomfortable to me.
You think that's kind of a jerk move?
No, I also don't have the body. I never had the body for it. I never had the biceps or like the six pack to do it. If I had huge arms and a six pack, maybe I would do it, but I don't. And so I got to play to my strengths.
Who's your player comp?
When I was a player?
Yeah.
It depends. I changed my roles.
You're a little Jokic-y to me.
I was athletic back in the day.
Well, so is he.
No.
He's pretty athletic for his size.
I was more, in my younger days at Clackamas Community, I was more of Andre Iguodala, I would say.
Whoa.
Really good defender, really athletic.
Ice in your veins.
I could shoot, but I wasn't like the strength of my game. And then at Concordia, I mean, I don't know, I just looked to score every time. So it was a little different. It was a completely different role.
Who is the Jamal Crawford?
You know? No, because I don't have the
microwave. Microwave Vaughn.
I have a very unorthodox basketball game. I don't really do moves. I'm just kind of like do a lot of hesitation and use my body.
You'd be good in NBA Street.
Yeah,
I feel like I would have loved to have seen you. I know the photo that you have of blocking Kevin Love. That's a photo, right?
No, it's a shot over him. I have a shot over Kevin Love.
That you made.
I made it. Floater. I think my parents have that hanging up in their garage.
That's awesome. They love you. You know, with AI these days, we can turn that into a dunk and a facial on Kevin Love.
Me on the Blazers or something?
Yeah. Just totally hammering it in his face. So like, this was me. Concordia, shout out. We'll wrap up the show coming up on the other side here on the Bald-Faced Truth.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Well, it's been a lot of fun filling in for Canzano the last few days, but John is back tomorrow. All of you that have been missing John Canzano in your life on the radio side, he is back tomorrow, 3 to 6 p.m. here on the Bold Faced Truth Radio Network. Judah Newby and Stephen Vaughn filling in the last few days. It's been a lot of fun. Talked a lot of football, NFL, and college. Gave away a bunch of tickets on the show the last few days as well. So that has been an absolute blast. We couldn't quite get to our NFL best bets, Stephen, so we'll have to do that on the side. But I'm going to go ahead and take the Bears over 8.5 wins this year. And go ahead and take the Raiders under whatever their win total is. I'm just under on the Raiders.
You're very high on the Bears. I think there's a lot of optimism. I don't know. I need to see Matt Eberflus be a good coach before I can say they're making the playoffs.
Well, I guess I'm going to ride or die with them anyway. Nothing like riding with Matt Eberflus. Is it August 14th or what? I can't wait to ride with Matt Eberflus. Thanks for joining us here on the show, John. We'll be back tomorrow talking all things plus the Blazers. What is their next step for distribution after parting ways with Root Sports today? I know John will have thoughts on that tomorrow on the show. 3 to 6 on the Bald-Faced Truth.